Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Pads are popping. Don't come a knocking. It is Senior Bowl week around here at Canty and Golic Jr. I think that qualifies. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And when we are not thoroughly distracted by coverage of the Senior Bowl on ESPN2 or Chris looking longingly at the NFL live crew out in Las Vegas going out there for the Pro Bowl, as I just see on one screen Dan Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, Laura Rutledge, and Marcus Spears smiling in the sun in the Vegas studio out there where the ESPN gambling folks are. And then on the other screen, the weather around here calling for freezing rain and a flash freeze in Connecticut right now. Deliver us from this evil.
So it sounds like a good time for the NFL live crew to get out of Connecticut is what you're saying.
Yeah, they made the right choice on all of that. Yeah. And, as I said, the studio where they are is with studio where you can see Doug Kazarian and the rest of the crew as a part of the Daily Wager on ESPN. And that is where you can also see our next friend joining us on the show, Aaron Dolan, our ESPN sports betting analyst, joining us now. Aaron, how you doing?
Good. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I was just hearing what you were saying, and I, too, should be heading to Vegas. I don't know who I need to call, who I need to speak to, but the weather is nasty up here in the East, so I'm going to be sent to Vegas.
That is true. I mean, Aaron, listen, you're part of the Daily Wager family. Have you started to try and negotiate your way out to Las Vegas full-time and just make this permanent?
At some point, we'll see. We'll see. It depends. There's a lot of guys, or I should say our entire team mainly is in Vegas, so we have some people on the East Coast because that three-hour time zone, you know, shift can be tough.
Listen, Aaron, you just let us know if you need us to weaponize our platform. We're already going to bat for Jordan Cornette trying to get him to the Super Bowl since he's a Bengals fan. So when you want to make the move, let us know, and the full power of Canty and Golic Jr., which I don't know how much it's worth actually, but it will be behind you. So in the meantime, Aaron, before we go to getting the move right, let's take a look at some of what we've got coming up here, because we're a little over a week away from the Super Bowl still, but as you look at the lines and the money coming in right now, what stuck out to you so far about some of the trends heading into the big game?
Yes. So the Rams, they actually opened -3.5. They're currently sitting at -4.5. As for that total, it opened 50. It's down to 48.5. Now, where we're seeing money and tickets come in on Caesars Sportsbook, in terms of the spread, we're seeing 70% of the tickets on the Bengals, and then the money split 53% on the Rams. As for that total, 54% tickets, 79% money on that under. So that's why we keep seeing that under continue to move down and drop, which is actually at 48.5 is the lowest total that we've had in the last 6 years. And then as for the money line, the Bengals have 81% of the tickets, 61% of the money. It's not really surprising to see the Bengals hold a lot of the tickets and money for the money line, just given that the public loves to bet on these underdogs. But nonetheless, I mean, these lines are extremely sharp. I know we're 1 week away, and I feel like I, and along with even the team on Daily Wager, we've discussed in meetings, it's just like a really, really hard game to handicap, because you want to kind of just be like, you know what, the Rams are a better team, they should be able to cover. But at the same time, since he just continues game after game to completely shock us.
Aaron, I know a lot of people want to get involved with the line and with the team totals, but the prop bets are always huge when it comes to the Super Bowl, and one of the most popular markets is who's going to win Super Bowl MVP. And I see in your notes you outline that the quarterbacks are the way to go, but you also point to how many Rams players are ahead of a number of Bengals players in terms of being in line or the odds for Super Bowl MVP. What are the odds makers telling us about what they expect by having so many Rams players high up when it comes to odds for Super Bowl MVP?
I think off the bat, when you look at this market, you just assume that the Rams are going to win just based on how many players, and also just shows you how many weapons they have on this team when you really take a look at it. You know, the quarterbacks, they absolutely dominate in this market. In the last 20 seasons, quarterbacks have won 13 times. That's why you see Stafford favored and then Burrow's right behind him. Cooper Kupp is the only other player on the Rams that's under 10-1. But it was interesting. Adam Pullen, assistant director of trading at Caesars, had said a good amount of actions also come in on Aaron Donald, and that people like to bet the top defensive players just because they're juicy odds. But personally, I mean, I think this is a market where you stick with the quarterback. If you think the Rams are going to win, you take Matthew Stafford. If you think the Bengals are going to win, then you go with Joe Burrow. I know it's fun to bet these juicy odds, but personally for me, I would not bet Aaron Donald in this you know, market, given that in the last 20 years, the defensive player has only won this award three times, the last actually being Von Miller in 2015. But this, of course, another fun market to bet in, but just historically, it's, you know, the quarterbacks that win it.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm with you. I saw Justin Tuck in 2007 in Super Bowl 42, and if he can't win MVP, then that's a heavy lift when it comes to trying to win MVP as a defensive player.
Yes.
Going to be the difficulty there for any defensive player to get on the board. Canty Ngola Jr. talking to ESPN sports betting analyst Aaron Dolan with us on the hotline. And if we can't get a defensive player to win MVP, then maybe we can take a look at the prop market on this. It's never too early to start looking at some of the player props heading into this game, especially when we've got a swaggy kicker getting ready to hit the Super Bowl stage, Aaron.
Yes, I feel like it's talked about, but not enough in the sense of this is a rookie kicker, Evan McPherson, and if it wasn't for him, the Bengals would not be in this position. I mean, he's had 40 points in the last three games, just four of those being extra points, which is absolutely crazy. 100% efficiency in the last three games, breaking records left and right. I do like over his kicking points at 7.5. He's cashed this in all three postseason games so far. And there's hundreds, I mean, there's thousands of markets that you can bet into, and you can kind of find markets that correlate to each other. For example, if I like Evan McPherson over kicking points, I also like the Bengals' longest field goal made because he's more efficient than Matt Gay, and he's actually kicked a longer field goal already this postseason. And then, for example, you could also bet McPherson over 1.5 made field goals. Now, this is already getting pretty juiced up. It's minus 150 likely to happen, but it's just crazy how many markets there are, and that you can kind of, you know, it's a kicking market that I'm talking about with these three, but you can kind of find a player and a bet, and you can find hundreds of markets, it feels like, on a certain particular topic. So make sure you deep dive into those prop markets. I know it's very, very overwhelming, but it's also such an area you can exploit because, like we talked about at the beginning of the segment, the spread, the total, the money line, I mean, those are the sharpest lines you're going to find.
Lots of good stuff out there, and you got time to do the research. We got over a week until the game started, so heed Aaron's advice. Get out there, do the homework, and let's all get rich together here. Aaron, you guys can check her out on This Just In, on the Daily Wager, all over ESPN. We appreciate you coming on, as always, and I'm sure we'll talk to you next week before the game.
Thank you, guys. Stay warm.
My God, we'll try. The Super Bowl, speaking of being warm, is a hot ticket. Hot Tickets brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seats reward is your ticket for more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live. Coming up next, we will take a look out at the coaching landscape. So much discussion focused on the lawsuit from Brian Flores, and it's got us asking the most daunting question currently facing the NFL for the rest of this offseason. We'll get to that next here. Canty Ngola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We'll get caught up on some NBA news and notes as we head towards the deadline with Nick Friedell, our ESPN NBA reporter, coming up in about 10 minutes here. But Chris, we've seen now what's gone on in the NFL in the last couple of days. Brian Flores in the lawsuit against the league for racist hiring practices, accusing them of such. And it had us wondering about, in an offseason where we had 9 head coaching jobs potentially available, so far all filled by white candidates, if we would see the league go 0-9, which, as we talked to folks around the league, seemed to be the thing everyone involved was dreading, especially given the perception of the NFL. We got some news that's going to continue to go towards that path. Rick Stroud, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down for the Tampa Bay Times, tweeted this: "Hearing Bucs offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich is expected to remove himself from consideration for the Jags head coaching job soon. Former Raiders interim head coach Rich Bisaccia and former Eagles head coach Doug Peterson remain strong candidates." So apparently the mess down in Jacksonville surrounding what the hell they were going to do a head coach will now no longer involve Byron Leftwich, their former first round pick.
Yeah, which makes no sense too, Gojo, because from the outset of their coaching search, it seemed like Leftwich was their top target. And for them to pivot away from that just because Leftwich insisted that he work with a different general manager, that he didn't want to work with Trent Baalke, I don't understand why they would take that tack. Trent Baalke hasn't proven anything as the general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we know he's the one that's mainly responsible for ousting Jim Harbaugh with the San Francisco 49ers, and we see how that worked out in the aftermath of that decision. So it just doesn't seem like Trent Baalke is a good enough reason for Byron Leftwich not to have the opportunity to be your next head coach, especially given that you're trying to develop a franchise quarterback and that Trent Baalke in part was responsible for the huge swing and miss in bringing Urban Meyer in, which was an abject failure. So I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. But again, these are the strings that come along with these jobs when it comes to black coaching candidates. These are the types of things that they have to deal with. This is the higher degree of difficulty that they're faced with as opposed to their white counterparts, which is a part of the disparity that Brian Flores was trying to highlight in his class action lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, what a just sheer embarrassment the way that this has played out for Jacksonville between when they were bringing in certain candidates to interview, this entire mess surrounding Trent Baalke. It all reeks of a process that, listen, depending on these candidates, we all have a lot of respect for what Rich Bisaccia was able to do with the Raiders this year. Doug Peterson's a Super Bowl winning head coach. Those aren't bad options, but again, that would be succeeding in spite of what leadership has managed to do down there, and we saw what leadership tried to do with a hand-picked gift in Trevor Lawrence as the number one overall pick this last year. So my fear for that player's talents being squandered remains very high. But, Chris, you're right. This is exactly what we heard Hugh Jackson, Brian Flores, and others afraid of when it comes to black head coaches having their chances squandered, not being given legitimate opportunities. And it's interesting about where we go from here. We've talked a lot about that the last couple of days. I want to play this from Rams GM Les Snead. He joined the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max earlier and gave his response to the Brian Flores situation with the guys.
What I do know, what I can say in this deal is, what we all know is, unfortunately, in this matter, we're not where we want to be. But I do think, fortunately, there have been and there currently are, right, a lot of good men and women trying to do their part to get us there. Not there yet, but we're trying to get closer. And probably in Brian's case, that's a situation that is part of this process that is progress, right? That people doing their part to try to get us closer to where we want to be.
A lot of tiptoeing.
Yeah, man, come on, man. With Les Snead, you can't both sides this thing, man. You can't say that with Brian, what Brian Flores is doing is a part of this process. Either you support Brian Flores fully in what he's trying to do and acknowledging that there is an issue with the disparity with black coaches getting opportunities to become the head guy versus their white counterparts, or you don't. And Les Snead, you talk about there are a lot of good folks behind the scenes that are doing their part. What the hell are you doing? That's the part that I want to know from active general managers, from active head coaches. What part of this are you doing? Where are you picking up the mantle that Brian Flores? Because we know what Brian Flores is doing. He's sacrificing his career. So I would ask to those that have job security that are in these given roles, if you know that there's a disparity, what are you doing about it? Because you're certainly not talking loud in those microphones. All of the clips that we hear, it sound a lot like what Les Snead just said. It's a lot of hemming and hawing. It's a lot of both sides in this thing trying to acknowledge the efforts made by the league, which seem like mostly optics as opposed to actually trying to get to the bottom of the issue and create a fair and equitable playing field for black coaches in the head coaching hiring cycles. That's the part of this that I don't like, Gojo. And I don't like when general managers insult our intelligence like what Les Snead did on KJM this morning. I'm not going to stand for it. Either you're going to stand up and speak up on behalf of Brian Flores, acquaint yourself with the facts, but you also know what's going on. We got 32 teams, 32 head coaches. Only one is black. And the league is 73% black in terms of the players, which are the product. There's no shortage of former players that want to be involved in coaching, that want to be a part of front offices, and yet we can't get those opportunities in representative numbers in compared to white counterparts. So that's the part of this that I don't like. And if Les Snead is acknowledging that there's a problem, I need to know from Les Snead, what is your organization and what are you personally doing to try to fix the problem? Because it's not on somebody else to do it. It needs to be on all of us to take action.
Yeah, I mean, it says it in the back of the end zones.
Exactly. It takes all of us. Isn't that what it says? It's on the back of the helmets, too. It takes all of us. Is that only supposed to apply to issues in society? Is that only supposed to apply to equity when it comes to, you know, American mainstream? Or does that actually apply to the business practices of the NFL?
I would say this, Chris, because a lot of what the response we've heard has sounded like people unsure legally what they can say. And if that's the case, just say that. Like, hey, this is an ongoing lawsuit against the league here, and I feel like I can't comment as this is going on. Because that or otherwise, Chris, like, quite honestly, this is what we talked about yesterday. Most of what we'll hear right now, I think, as far as support for Brian Flores, can be pretty easy from everyone involved. Because for the Rams specifically, if we're talking about employing black men as head coaches in the NFL, they're not going to have to worry about employing a new coach for a while. Sean McVay is going to be in that seat. This is low stakes for Les Snead and company around there, who have a chance for their running backs coach to potentially usurp Kevin O'Connell if he leaves for an offense or a head coaching job for the Minnesota Vikings, as many people think he's favored to. It's a lot of layup answers for you if you want them there to go and play lip service support-wise for Brian Flores. To me, that's not hard here, unless you're afraid of the legality, in which case, just say that. Like, to your point, this is all stuff that feels like PR 101 in a way that I'm always a little shocked that people punt on when they get the opportunity. Les Snead's a smart guy. He's done a lot of great things with that organization. I just don't understand why it seems like spots where it should be easy answers if you are worried about the legality of the situation, then you don't go that route.
I hear you with the legality part of it, Gojo, and I'm not trying to dismiss it because it is a real thing, but there's also a moral obligation in this too. Good people, people of high character and good standing with their clubs and with the community are being raked over the coals. And what's happened to Brian Flores is not the first instance that we've seen with a black coach in the National Football League being railroaded. And unfortunately, if nothing is done about it, it won't be the last. And that's why I think it's beyond just black coaches standing up. I think it's active coaches, active general managers, also active players alongside with the former players. We saw what the Fritz Pollard Alliance had to say in their support for Brian Flores yesterday. It's going to take everyone getting involved to create the kind of pressure on the league office and on the 31 owners in order to shift in terms of what they've been doing to something that resembles a fairer process when it comes to considering black candidates in head coaching jobs.
Yeah, we keep saying it. Like, Chris, you keep saying the stat about there being one black head coach and all of this. And we look back, we talked about how it looks when Brian Flores goes out here and manages to actually give you back-to-back winning seasons and then you fire the guy. How it looks when you get Hugh Jackson after 2.5 years, let go by the Cleveland Browns when they're supposedly this four-year plan, understanding things aren't going to go well. You can go back and look at Lovie Smith, 2 years in Tampa. They draft Jameis Winston and then turn that thing over to Dirk Cutter. Again, you can feel like the people involved are not racist in their approach, but when the results consistently skew in favor and make it look like black candidates are not getting the time to develop in the same way their white counterparts are, a la an example like Jeff Fisher, who was with the Rams for 5 seasons before being let go when they drafted Jared Goff. Those are the things as the NFL you have not earned the benefit of the doubt on when people look at you and ask what your intentions are behind that. So that is the battle they're going to have to continue to climb. And right now, the answers and the results we've seen have been pretty substandard. So we'll wait and see again what the response to this lawsuit is going to look like, what the investigation into all this is going to look like. But that is going to stay top of mind until we start getting more answers and hearing from Roger Goodell and others around the league. We got plenty more time to get to that at ChrisCaney99 and at Mike Golic Jr. is where you can get at us on the CNG Twitter. But coming up next, James Harden says that he has done too much talking. What is next for the Brooklyn Nets and their star trio? We'll get to that here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
They said we were nuts back in the fall of 1979, saying that all sports 24 hours a day would make it on TV. And now you say we're nuts trying to start ESPN Radio? We're dead serious. We know you like us on TV, and if you do, you'll love us on radio.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And as we have heard, a frustrated James Harden, a Lakers team without LeBron James still dealing with injury, and all the rest of what's going on around the association. We thought we'd check in with ESPN NBA reporter Nick Friedel, who joins us now on the hotline. What's going on, Nick?
How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm doing a lot better than James Harden right now, who continues to sound, like I said to Chris, like a frustrated older brother having to answer for all the rest of his siblings and what's been going on there. Like, Nick, tell me if I'm being crazy. Like, by midseason NBA standards, is this situation still getting as bad as possible for the Brooklyn Nets, given the skid they're on?
There is nonstop drama with this team, guys. It's just constant. I like the description of Harden, because I asked him last night after that game, I said, why hasn't the consistency been there throughout the season? And I obviously he knew that I meant it more than just, well, Kyrie has been kind of half in and half out. And he looks at me and he's just like, you know, just like I do. Oh, man, this is going to be an interesting few months here with this team, because that's what makes it so fascinating. They still feel, and they've lost six in a row, and the Kings are awful, and so that game was terrible for the Nets last night. But they still feel, even if they lose these next couple games to Utah and Denver, they get home, they get Kevin Durant back in the next couple weeks. Something happens with more clarity on the vaccination mandate in New York City, and Kyrie's able to play in home games, and that's wishful thinking, at least right now, but there's certainly a hope in the organization that at some point in the next few months that happens. But if all three of those guys are on the floor playing, they don't feel like they can be beat. The problem is that, as we know, they've only played 16 times together in 2 years. And so the idea that everything's just going to magically turn around at this point, it's tough to see, but they are holding on to that hope that their talent, when everybody is right and able to play, can still overwhelm whoever is in front of them.
Yeah, Nick, but based on where they're at right now and seeing what the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks are capable of doing when they're playing at their best, I don't know, man. It's a tough sell to look at the Brooklyn Nets as the team coming out of the East and going to the NBA Finals. But, Nick, as you know, I'm the resident Lakers fan, and so my line of questioning is going to always lead with them. And LeBron James is in jeopardy of missing his fifth straight game tonight if he doesn't play against the LA Clippers. And so I wanted to ask you, internally with the Lakers organization, how much concern is there with the timeline with LeBron James' return to play and how that impacts the team's improvement in their playoff standings in the Western Conference?
Chris, I'm not sure there's enough concern in the world right now for the, the Lakers front office. I mean, they've just got a mess on so many different levels. With that group, with the roster. So specific to LeBron, yeah. Every day that we don't see him, I think you worry a little bit more that it's just lingering more than anybody could have expected. And if LeBron's not on the floor, we know full well that they don't have much of a chance to do anything that they had hoped to before the season. But the sad part for the Lakers is even if LeBron is on the floor, and even if he does come back here, at some point in the next couple of games and he's feeling better, that team just isn't good enough. And we're talking about the Nets and all their drama. The Lakers have nonstop drama, but they have drama for a mediocre team. And that's way, way worse, because this is a team that even if they get right, even if LeBron is healthy and AD can stay on the floor and Russ, I don't even know what the optimistic view would be the rest of the way, but if he's a little bit better, they're still not good enough. That team is just flawed. They've been flawed. And LeBron riding in at the end here healthy is not enough to get them back to where they want to be.
Kane Angola Jr. talking to ESPN NBA reporter Nick Friedel with us on the hotline. And Nick, it wouldn't be pre-NBA trade deadline talk on national radio if we didn't ask you about Ben Simmons and the 76ers here. We know it's been top of mind for everybody, but with all of the musings publicly from Daryl Morey and the great play from Joel Embiid, has any part of this situation changed in your mind? Do you think that Ben Simmons on the other side of the deadline is still on track to be a 76er?
That's the way it feels, Mike, and it's crazy to me, because when you have Embiid playing like the MVP and you have a legit chance to at least push in the Eastern Conference to go into the postseason with Ben Simmons, who has made it abundantly clear that he doesn't want to be there anymore, that just feels like the wrong play. And I know Daryl Morey is trying to drum up as much interest as he can get, and I know he doesn't want to make a deal that he doesn't feel like gets him enough in return for Simmons, but at some point, you just got to do what you feel like you can to try and win a title now. And I just don't see any scenario where any team is coming in and saying, oh, we've got to have Ben Simmons. I mean, that is a roll of the dice. If I'm a leader of a front office right now in the NBA, I don't want to make, because this is a guy who doesn't want to be in Philly. You're not sure if he loves the game the same way as he did prior to all this happening. I am very surprised that it's gotten to this point right now. And when you watch and what's going on and read the tea leaves, it just feels like Simmons is going to be there post-deadline, which, guys, seems really, really crazy, again, given the way that Embiid is playing.
God, pray for Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio as we approach the deadline around here. Nick, always great talking to you, man. I'm sure we'll be in touch again soon. Enjoy everything else, and we'll see if we get any action as the deadline draws closer and closer.
You got it, guys. Always enjoy it.
At Nick Friedel on Twitter is where you can get at him. The NBA is also on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as the Clippers host the Lakers, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. And man, oh man, Chris, a bleak picture painted by Nick for the Lakers heading into tonight, man. The wheels coming off this thing famously. And that LeBron James injury, as cryptic as it's felt now for a little bit, I think probably becomes the story for them even beyond this year, as now two of his 3 years as a Laker have involved injury for a guy who's nearing, you know, damn near two decades in the league.
Yeah, we got the knee injury this season. We had the ankle injury last season. And then 2 years ago, you're talking about the groin injury. So it's just been marred with injuries for LeBron James. And I guess this is just a matter of Father Time catching up with him. He's 37 years old, Gojo, and he's second in the league in scoring. I mean, in terms of their reliance on LeBron to do the heavy lifting on the offensive end, essentially to do everything on that team, you just realize that it feels like it's something that's unsustainable. And so unless Anthony Davis has a turn back the clock type of moment where he goes back to the guy we saw 2 years ago in the NBA bubble, this Lakers team is going nowhere fast, and it's not a good feeling as a Lakers fan sitting back and having a front row seat to it.
Yeah, the promise from the bubble a couple of years ago seems like such a distant memory at this point, but we'll check them out again. The Lakers going to be on ESPN Radio coming up later tonight. Coming up next, though, before we go forward, we look back. Let's hit the state of the franchise as the San Francisco 49ers head into their offseason and try and trade their handsome quarterback. Next on ESPN Radio.
In 1920, halfback Fritz Pollard led the Akron Pros to a championship in the newly formed National Football League. The next season, he accepted the role of player coach, becoming the first black head coach in NFL history. Today, his impact is felt through the Fritz Pollard Alliance, an organization advocating for diversity in coaching and front office positions.
ESPN Radio celebrates Black History Always. This is ESPN Radio.
Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We'll get back to in about 10 minutes the dominant news the last couple of days, Brian Flores, and the outlook going forward as the former Dolphins head coach gets ready to sue the NFL. But Chris, we got over a week until we get to the upcoming Super Bowl matchup between the Rams and the Bengals. We had two teams we waved bye to last weekend. And so before we get on to the business of the big game, we got to hit the 49ers as we do their exit interview on this season. Kyle Shanahan's outfit that once again managed to get farther than most people would have predicted based on some of the injuries they had to start the year, based on the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback, found their way back to the conference championship game this weekend. And we know he's not going to be the quarterback going into next year. We've already heard Jimmy Garoppolo going to be a major, probably a guy in a different home, talked about wanting to get to a winning organization. But Chris, as you look at this 49ers team, this another one that really it's all going to center around what do you do to make life easy on your second-year quarterback and Trey Lance, who's finally going to get the reins to this thing.
Well, I can tell you a good place to start, which is giving your all-pro wide receiver Deebo Samuel a contract extension because he's eligible for one right now. He's going into his fourth season. So this is the time to get it done. And Gojo, we know with these deals, the earlier you pay these guys, the cheaper they end up being. Although I use that word cheap with a caveat because we know it's going to be an expensive contract. You're talking upwards of $20+ million on average annual value. And while you're at it, while you're doling out money, you might as well give some to your all-pro defensive end, Nick Bosa, who's on the other side of this thing. I mean, Gojo, his brother got $27 million a year on average annual value a couple of seasons ago. I mean, if that's what Joey got, Nicky's probably going to be flirting with that $29, $30 million territory.
Ding, ding, ding.
Average annual value. That's quarterback money. But that's what you're going to get when you're talking about an elite pass rusher like him. And so the difficult part about this for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch is they're up against it when it comes to their salary cap. I mean, they've got $3 million in cap space. Now, when they move Jimmy Garoppolo, they'll get some relief. It's about $25 million in cap relief that they'll get. But still, you're talking about two huge contracts that they've got to address. And then, oh, by the way, continuing to round out the rest of the roster in order to have enough of a supporting cast for your second-year quarterback. So there's a laundry list of things that they got to do when it comes to personnel. But the core of this team is there, and they've already proven that they can do high-level winning because they did it in spite of having an underwhelming quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. So I have no doubt that the San Francisco 49ers are just going to retool this thing rather than rebuild.
Yeah, Chris, like all their problems seem to have easy answers, and this is what you expect from teams in conference championship weekend. We know Mike McDaniel, their offensive coordinator, is one of the guys potentially up as a finalist for the Miami Dolphins job, but this is, you know, an offense built on Kyle Shanahan's vision anyway. You've got Trent Williams at left tackle, the best player in the league at that position. You brought over Alex Mack to help solidify that line. Mike McGlinchey's going to be back healthy for you again at right tackle. And we know really for you, like you mentioned, you've got most of the key pieces in place. Fred Warner on the defensive side, George Kittle and Kyle Juszczyk on the offensive side. Like, for what Kyle's vision was of this thing, it's all in place, and it should all make it easier for Trey Lance. And Chris, to me, that becomes the most interesting part of this is I think already the early returns on Trey Lance that we saw this year were good enough to where people were scratching their heads as to why we didn't see him more involved in critical moments in the playoffs where he could have given you an added advantage in that run game with some wrinkles and short yardage. To me, a lot of this also, Chris, has to be soul-searching for Kyle Shanahan in those spots. Are you going to push the grounds a little bit more in pivotal situations? Because throughout the playoffs, we saw conservative play calling from him in critical moments. That NFC Championship game had three instances of punting from plus territory in a way that surprised us for an offensive coordinator that gets a lot of praise for being creative and innovative.
Well, Gojo, you make those decisions because you don't trust your quarterback, and I think he's justified in feeling that way based on how the last two possessions for the 49ers went, where they abandoned the run game and it was all Jimmy Garoppolo just dropping back to pass. So I think that with Trey Lance, it's a matter of how he processes information. And coming out, we heard that he was one of the smartest quarterbacks in the draft class, and so that's going to have to be on full display. But it's trusting the player to make the right reads, to make the right decisions. And I'm not sure that Kyle got to that point with Trey this season. And so it'll be interesting to see the evolution of that relationship and how much leeway Kyle ends up giving Trey Lance, because it's easy to come in spot duty where Shanahan can draw up the formation in the scheme to dictate to the opposing defense what looks you're going to get from a coverage standpoint. But that's not something that you can do all the time. And so in those instances where the quarterback has to survey the defense, understand what he's looking at as far as coverages, and make the right play call, make the right reads and throw in the football, I think there's a little bit of a learning curve for Trey. So I'm hoping that with a full season under his belt, being in those meeting rooms with Jimmy Garoppolo, being able to learn how to prepare from week to week, that has him ready to take over the reins in 2022, because that's what the 49ers are expecting. They invested three first-round draft picks to move up to get him, and so he's going to have to be their guy. Physically, he has a lot more gifts than what Jimmy G brought to the table, and I'm excited about how that can unlock Kyle Shanahan's offense. I really do think it takes it to another level.
Yeah, we know, certainly. A lot of this is going back to driven by memories of Jimmy Garoppolo airmailing some big-time downfield throws as a part of that passing game. And, man, when you go back to North Dakota State, there's not a lot of football under his belt for Trey Lance, but, man, the good is good in all the spots where Jimmy wasn't great. And that's what he's brought here to do, take the high floor and turn it into a ceiling that finally takes home a Lombardi trophy. Coming up next, we will head back to the lawsuit dominating the NFL news cycle and find out what's next for Brian Flores and company on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.